This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
All right, welcome to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. I am your host, Steve Ulscher, along with the lovely Mary Gourlay, Rich Hote, and White Wade, I think, just ran out to go get his sugar fix. I think that's right. Where he ended up on that one. All right, I got to tell you, this is exciting to me. You know why?
Nope. Because if I think I know where you're going, you know, sometimes you know, just take
Rich
a sharp
right. Rich knows. Why is this show exciting for me, Rich? Come on. Do tell me. Do tell. You know.
I'm sure there's a few reasons, but this
at least
is,
name six.
All right. This is an amazing author right here.
Well, it's an amazing author for sure.
You're going to get to learn how to raise your ranks of your books.
Well, I doubt he's going to talk about that, but we're going to be talking. Why else do you think I'm excited to have Mike on here? What's the name of the episode? What was the suggested name of his episode? Do you remember? Do you read it?
Prophet?
Yeah. Reinventing Prophet. Why is that exciting to me?
Say it. Internet
Prophet. Say it.
Money.
Say it. Why? Why is money exciting to me?
You love money.
Why do I love money? Say it.
Rich, he's scaring me.
You have a brethren.
Say it. I want to hear you say it. Say it. Do it. Say it. Wade will say it. Why do I love money, Wade? Why does money excite me? Why?
I'm not
say
buying
it.
In, but
say
I want. I know how
it.
To spell it.
Do it. You got to give him a mic.
I'm lost too.
You what?
I'm lost too. I just assume because you like money.
Oh, money's God, you
thing.
People. Jesus.
Because you're Jewish and you
Yay!
Like money.
Hey, touchdown.
I got
right.
it.
Yay, you win.
I know you too well.
You do. Although, Rich, I thought you knew me more, man.
He did say brethren or something.
Oh, come on. I wasn't just
you
buying
just
in.
Wouldn't.
I wouldn't
say it. Chicken.
Because he's much more.
Because then we'd have to listen to everything. Him go on and on.
We're
going
to have to get you a rubber
it.
Chicken. I recognize you with a rubber chicken. Isn't that what Novak said?
And $100.
We got. Well, I don't like that part of you.
Because you can't eat a rubber chicken.
Oh, man. All right. So I will send you 100 ruples or rupees.
Don't scare Mike away.
Right. Let's not scare. Okay. As a matter of fact, let's bring Mike up. And I think actually Kelly's still on as well. We still have Kelly on here. I think Kelly's still hanging out somewhere. Kelly, are you still with us too? Oh, that's going to echo. Yeah, we won't do that one. Okay. But Mike, how you doing, man? Did you hang out with us? Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm intimidated as all heck. When it clicked on, it said, because you're Jewish.
Oh, my God.
That's
missed
the first words out of your mouth.
Sorry.
No,
it was Steve was taunting us and taunting and so.
Yeah. No, I was taunting because I was saying this is one of my I was really excited and still am really excited about this episode because I love money. I'm a Jew. I have to admit it's a reinventing prophet as the name of the show here. I was like, yeah, I'm all about this one. So count me in. All right, so Mike, so you've been up to some pretty interesting things, man. Multi-million dollar companies by the time you were 35. How old are you now? Just so we can put a little context around this.
44.
You're 44. Okay, so you're part of our brethren, basically. So we're all sort of in that Gen X kind of world there. Now, when you were, so let's see, 35, so 9, 10, 11 years ago, basically 9 years, whatever it was, what businesses were you in at that point that you had built up and sold?
I was in the tech space. First company was Computer Networks. Basically, I was the computer guy. Second business was Computer Crime Investigation. We did part of the Enron trial, in fact.
Did you really? How were you involved in the Enron trial?
There was one component called the Nigerian barge trial where Enron was illegally shifting around money around barges in Nigeria, and we did the forensic investigation there of all the computer evidence, all the emails that went back and forth between Fastow and Kenneth Lay and all those guys.
Can you do that now with Hillary?
I was going to say.
I'm going out of the business. I sold that company to a Fortune 500. They're doing that now.
All right.
Well, and probably a great time to get out, considering that if you sold, well, let's see, if you were 35 and you sold, that was right before the bubble then, so you probably did okay.
2006, sold it, I did okay, but what it did was, my ego exploded. The only thing bigger than my bank account at that time was my ego, and we just did foolish things with money. Like, it got me thinking a whole new way about money when I lost it all.
Yeah, were you single or married at the time?
Married,
3 children.
Okay. Go ahead, Rich.
I was just going to say, I'm always curious when people that make a lot of money, they don't really spend their way out of a lot of money. They kind of bad invest their way out of a lot of money. Which did you do?
I bad invested. I became an angel investor. I sucked at it. I now call myself the angel of death.
Wow. Everything you touch dies.
Yeah. Everything I touched turned to dirt. Nothing turned to gold. And it was weird. As it was collapsing, I actually spent more money so I could buy my way out of it. Clearly, I knew about business, I said. And all I needed to do was touch these businesses like Midas, and they turned to gold. Mm-hmm. And they didn't. And it took me, I had to lose my entire wealth, every penny. Before I kind of woke up to it and said, "Oh, maybe I don't know what I'm doing."
Let's put a little context around that, and you can share as much as you like or as little as you like. But how much are we talking about that you were able? What was your personal take on the sales, and what did you blow through?
So my personal take on the sale was just over $1 million. Mm-hmm. We sold the company. We were a small company. We sold it for $3.5 million. Mm-hmm. I was a minority partner at the time. I'm another partner, and then. I also sold my house at the time, and there were some other kind of confluence events that brought money in. And I was like, oh, so it's so easy to make money. I'm just going to keep making money, but I'm going to spend like a guy that has $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first thing that came was taxes. I remember a tax bill coming for $400,000 in installment.
Mother.
Yeah, that's what I said with a few profanities. And I didn't plan, wasn't prepared. It knocked the wind out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, but I still got some money. I got to show how successful I am. So I bought literally three cars on one day. I bought a Viper, a Land Rover, a 7 Series BMW. I started buying nonsense toys to show off my wealth.
So at least,
you look good.
Yeah, I mean, you look good, and at least you bought appreciating assets. So that was smart, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. So I lost money on all those things. I don't think I look good to anybody, by the way. I think I look like a jerk, driving around a stupid car. So, but then the rig thing was, I said, well, now I'm going to start making money left and right, repeating what I did, which, by the way, I did not repeat what I did. I invested in all these different startups.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't even investing. I just put money after ideas that were not even good ideas and not run by people that had experience. It was a train wreck.
Mm-hmm. So you were kind of blinded, if you will. I mean, like, I remember, I'm not sure if you know this or not, but I own liquor.com. I've owned that domain since 1998, and we've been through a couple of iterations. As a matter of fact, we had the S1 and we were ready to go public in March of 2000, which of course was, well, the beginning of the end at that point in time with that bubble. And I mean, look, what I know in my heart of hearts is that we were just blinded by the dot-com light. I mean, like literally ideas on a napkin at that point were just getting funded. I mean, millions. Like, you just had to go in and say, hey, I've got this idea, and people were, like, writing checks for millions of bucks.
Or on toilet paper.
Hey, good one. Man, really? Whoa, you shocked right there. So let's just say you may have been blinded at the time kind of by your own success. Would you say that's true?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bravado, success, and, the times didn't hurt. I was sold at the right time during the bubble where it was hard to do wrong. And going into 2008, it was hard to do right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so at what point then, so you got back into the world of what? Of creating your own business, of writing? What came first after you realized, like, I actually have to get money coming in since almost all of it has gone out? What did you do first?
Yeah, so I had this epiphany that blew my mind away.
Now, I'm
the one
broke.
Thing I didn't tell about those. Yeah, I'm broke. But there was another epiphany. I grew those businesses in survival mode. I was every dollar I made, I spent to grow. I was living check by check. So I only made my money when I sold it. But then I found out that actually 83% of businesses run their business in survival mode. Most businesses survive check by check.
Mm-hmm.
And the epiphany was this, that how can so many people be smart enough to build a business, grow a business, do all the facets, but they can't figure out profit? Like, what's missing in our brain? And then I found, and I believe, that the formula is flawed to profit. When I discovered that, I devoted, and I still am a full-time author, I just devoted to discovering kind of these hacks to business, these new paradigms to challenge the way we think. And the big one for me was profit, but there's other kind of finds or discoveries also.
Mm-hmm. So you figured out there was a formula to this, and did you apply that then to your own business, or did you just start teaching about the formula or the, I guess you call it the, basically the profit first formula? Did you create that formula and then teach about it, or did you actually apply it then to your own business first?
Yeah, I applied it to my own business first. So there's the angel investing. One company was dying on the vine, but still had a heart pulse or heartbeat in it. So it was a manufacturing business in St. Louis, and I applied this to it immediately. My own little business was just me. It was an author. I applied it to that, and I started experimenting with it. and things started to turn slowly but consistently, and then quicker and quicker. And then today, I believe in my best kind of gross estimate, meaning a broad estimate, would be 30,000 businesses doing it. On the low end, about 10,000. So somewhere between 10 to 30,000 businesses that I believe are now doing this method of addressing profit in a new way.
Mm-hmm. And so you're talking specifically about the profit first formula that has had that sort of impact?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. So we'll have to go over that as much as we can here, step by step, to kind of take folks through that, because that is what we are looking to do here, is to reinvent profit. And I got to tell you, there's a lot of companies, and I think you can attest to this as well, certainly being an angel investor and being involved in that tech world. I mean, you have a lot of people out there who are focused on top line revenue and who care whatsoever about what happens at the bottom line. And frankly, we've kind of perpetuated that way of thinking in terms of what you see with the unicorns and with those companies out there that are built to churn cash until the exit. And that's certainly something that we should probably talk about, you know, here right after the break, because we're going to have to take a quick break here on Reinvention Radio. But I do want to talk a little bit about how we've kind of perpetuated this mindset of we've just got to churn and churn and churn so that we can get as many subscribers or get as many customers or get as many visitors or get all of these metrics where they need to be at the expense of profit. And then hopefully this knight in shining armor comes to the table and says, okay, great, you have this, you have this, you have that. Now I'm going to give you $100 million and everybody's happy. So let's talk about that with Mike Michalowicz here on Reinvention Radio right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulcher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulcher.
All right, welcome back to Reinvention Radio. Man, I got to tell you, I'm like super impressed. I did some research there over the break. I had done some research, but obviously I did not dig deep enough because, my God, this guy is a god. Like, literally, Mike, are you? That's like my way of buttering you up there for the second segment. Did that work? And calling you a god, does that work? We're not there. Mike? Anybody?
He's on.
Is Wade still talking to Mike? Mike, no. Wade, let go of Mike. He's talking to Mike.
I potted him.
Mike, are you there?
Mary fixed it.
I'm here now.
There you are. Okay, great. So I don't know if you heard that or not, but I called you a god. Does that butter you up a little bit here for the second segment?
A god, yeah. Oh, no, I don't like that one.
All right. By the way, my single favorite blurb, I mean, you've had some pretty impressive people say some things about your books. You know, some folks that we've had on the show here, Michael Gerber, and Bob Berg and folks that I've interviewed, like Guy Kawasaki. You notice how I'm name dropping there? Isn't that impressive? That's like pretty
inspiring. You're name dropping people who are name dropping him.
That's like credibility by authority and authority by credibility and name dropping and all that fun stuff. But actually, you got to figure out how to hook us up with your mom, because she's got like the best. I mean, talk about a blurb. I mean, she really knows how to write an endorsement for your book. That's super impressive. How much did you pay her for that endorsement, by the way?
That cost me a few dozen roses as a thank you. Yeah, she's adorable. I'm actually going to see her tonight. I'll tell her you say hi.
Oh, absolutely. So how did you get, and so let's talk about this a little bit, because, I mean, obviously there's a million different ways we can go with this, but there are a lot of aspiring authors and current authors who listen to the show quite frequently. A couple of them actually might even be in this room. Hypothetically, a couple of them might
be. Might be you, Steve?
Yeah, well, might you,
be
you,
me?
It might be. and my other personalities over in the other part of the studio here.
A book coming out.
He does. Rich has a lot of books in him. But how did you get, I mean, look, 600 something odd reviews on the one, 400 odd reviews on the other, 300 on the other. I mean, your books do pretty well, man. So obviously the system that you have created, you have definitely applied to life here as an author. And so what are some of those tricks of the trade, man, that you've applied from an author perspective?
So I'll give you some obvious, but not too common. I'll give you one really cool hack I found.
Be friends with your mom.
The obvious, but not... yeah, right. Have your mom do your endorsements.
Right.
The one is to really invest the time in writing a really good book. And I know that's like so obvious, but so many people fail to do that. So
that explains a lot.
I mean, it takes me two to four years to write a book where I know some of my contemporaries can get it done in 2 to 3 months. Mm-hmm. And I don't find that to be true. And here's what I do. I prepare a thesis. I study it by interviewing people. And then I run tests against it, trying to disprove the thesis on my own businesses and through other people. And only once I have a proof of it, then do I write the book. Mm-hmm. So that's step one. Step two, of course, is constant promotion. I'm always out there promoting and sharing what's going on with it and telling other people about it. And they start an upward spiral. One book supports the other and so forth.
Yeah.
But here's the hack. That I'm surprised so few people do it, and it's so easy. Start your own used bookstore on Amazon. Because if you're the author of the book, you might as well sell your own used version. There's a portion of the population, I believe it's 10 to 20% of readers, prefer to buy a used book when they buy a print one.
Wow.
And here's the trick. When they buy a used book from you, I tell people, yes, the book is scratched, damaged, used, but then when they order the book, we instead send them a brand new one with a note that says, congratulations, we actually upgraded you to a brand new book. We hope you love it. So they're staged to have a good experience. And then we say, and do me one favor, if you're willing to give an honest review of what you think of this book, I'd appreciate it.
Wow.
And that has triggered so many reviews.
Wow, that's super smart. And so do they ship for you, or do you actually have your mom go down to the post office with the book and ship it, or how do you do that?
Well, we ship them ourselves. We have enough now. We have a shipping guy. We move probably 75 to 100 books used a day.
Do you really? Wow. That's super, super impressive.
Yeah,
very
Steve,
cool.
So now you can get rid of all those books in your garage.
I know, right? Now I'm thinking that's a great idea. I can actually put my kids to work, child labor. I mean, you want to profit first. You just hired wage slaves, and I've got two of them in the other room right there. So I think that's a great place to start. But one of the other things...
It's not easy. But, you know, one thing, we clear out one thing. One thing I also do is promote corporate sales. And that is a large portion of those used books, or the books that we stock, that you can sometimes sell to, and we do it very often, corporations who buy 50, 100, even 500 at a time. So that's also a good technique to use to move books.
Yeah.
So they're not
smart.
Used. They're just your regular book.
Yeah, they're not used. They're all regular books. It's a used bookstore. That's what
that's
I should
cool.
make clear.
No, you did.
It's
I
a
was
used
just...
bookstore.
Mm-hmm. I don't do math either, so.
Yeah. And so one of the things, though, that I think is really interesting is that unless I'm totally off base here, but I believe that when you write your books, you write them in evergreen fashion. So what you teach is something that is applicable as much today as it was 5 years ago, as much it'll be 5 years from now, yeah?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They're perennial truths. And I don't think I've ever written anything that's earth-shattering new, earth-breaking ground, but it's a new perspective, it's a new way of telling the story, and that's what gives it a fresh look, but it does last for a long time.
Yeah, as I always say, you don't want to recreate the wheel, you simply want to paint it your own color. Isn't that beautiful?
You know, sometimes you surprise me.
That's as deep as I get, like right there. And now I'm going to go hit the bong and we'll call it a day. All right, so let me ask you this, because clearly there is a method to your madness, and this profit-first formula is something that you can kind of take people through step by step. So why don't we take a couple of quick looks through that? And so what's sort of a high level of what the profit first formula is? And then what are some of the things that those who are entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, and aspiring entrepreneurs, what are some of the things they can keep in mind as they apply it to what they're doing?
Okay, so the profit first formula is the pay yourself first principle applied to business. That was my new painted wheel, was applying to business. Now, here's the problem. 83% of businesses are not profitable, and the reason why, I believe, is because we follow the old formula that says sales minus expenses equals profit. And the idea is this. Profit comes last in that formula, and it's human propensity. When something comes last, it gets ignored. You pick the last kid picked for the kickball team is the worst kid, the kid you don't want. So we are pre-programmed to put what comes last as an insignificant aside thought. We wait till the year end, and if it doesn't happen, wait for another year end. So I simply suggest it's sales minus profit equals expenses. And how you do it in your business, every day. I mean, every day there's a sale. You immediately predetermined.
You can't gloss over that because that's. I mean, that's super super smart. So,
yeah,
sales minus profit equals expenses. That I mean, that's that is super smart. You know, and you're right, man. It's not like it's oh my god, like this is. But I've never actually heard anyone put it like that, and that makes so much sense.
You should read his books. They're good.
Wait, he's got a book out. I heard he's got a used bookstore. I'm going to go to his used bookstore and see if I can get upgraded.
I love The Pumpkin Plan. That's a great book.
Oh, thank you.
So I love that. So sales minus profit equals expenses. Very, very smart. Okay, keep going.
Okay, so it's a paradigm shift. And the idea is, what I notice in entrepreneurs, and I notice myself, is we are not all logical, but we are very behavioral. Meaning, many of us don't know how to read income statements, balance sheets. I don't, cash flow statements. But what we do is we revert to looking at our bank balance, and then based on what we see, we spend. If we have a lot of money in there, we feel good. If there's no money, we panic. So if we take our profit first, and we allocate a predetermined percentage, 5, 10%, whatever, and hide that money from ourselves, that's the other key. You got to take it out and remove it. Then when you see your bank balance, you'll still run your business the same way. You'll look and see how much you have available, and you'll say, oh, there's some money there today. I'll spend. There's no money, and I'll make sales as fast as I can. Mm-hmm. But behind the scenes, because you're doing the pay-yourself-first principle in business, your profit accumulates, and your business inherently becomes more efficient because you're making do now with the right amount of money, not all the amount of money.
Yeah. Hmm. No, that's super smart. Hmm. Super,
so now
super
there's
smart.
So then I don't end up with more month than money that way too, right?
Yeah, which most businesses have way more months than money.
Yep. Yeah, and so, I mean, look, again, it seems like this just is common knowledge, but why do you think so many businesses just don't get it and end up going out of business? I mean, why does profit seem to be the last thing businesses are thinking about?
Yeah, because it's all we're told, right? We're always told, even the vernacular we use, it's the bottom line, it's the year end, it's the final take. It's always... Profit is something that comes last. Chances are, for the folks listening in right now, Steve, the last time they considered profit was when they did their tax returns. A few months back, the accountant said, oh, no profit this year, maybe next year. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we keep pushing off year at a time. Profit is not an event that happens one time. Profit is not an event. It's a habit. It must be baked into our business every single transaction, every single day.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, super smart. And so let me ask you this, because obviously there's more to it, but what if you had to take people through sort of that next step? I mean, because if you got a pyramid, obviously this is the most important, step there. Yeah. on the scale and on the pyramid, whatever you want to call it. What would be the next most important thing to think about?
The envelope system. It's something my dear mom, who we talked about, does. Maybe you have someone in your family that did this. Maybe you do it yourself. The envelope system. My mom would come home with pay. She worked at the local YMCA, say $100 for that week. She worked part-time. And she would divide the money up into a food envelope, a rent envelope for the apartment, give back to community, and so forth, mm-hmm. clothing. Now, what was interesting, whenever she went to the food store, there was always enough money in there. But what I want to be clear about, it's not the same amount of money. It's always enough, meaning sometimes she was sick and didn't get as much money. Other times she worked overtime. But she would drive to the food store, then open the envelope, and whatever money was in there, she had to make do with it. Now, the lesson is this in our business. Set up envelopes, if you will, with your bank. Instead of having one bank account where you do all your business transactions and you have this big tray of money that you see and spend based upon what you see, set up multiple envelopes, a profit envelope, a pay for yourself. You're the owner. You should be paid. Tax accounts, so you reserve for taxes appropriately, and the operating expenses to run your business. Now when money comes in, sales come in, you divide up based upon percentages to these different envelopes, and every time you log into your bank account, like you normally do anyway, you now know what the money has been attributed to and what you can use it for what purpose.
Hmm. That is pretty damn smart. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to have to take another break here on Reinvention Radio. We're talking to Mike Michalowicz. Wow, I mean, prolific author. Can't even call him just an author. He's a prolific author and a very successful one at that with Profit. Wow, Profit First Formula. I'm learning quite a bit around that and the toilet piper, entrepreneur and so on. So, man, this is some pretty interesting stuff.
Take
here.
Notes.
And I got to tell you, I need you to actually hold my envelopes. And, like, you're going to have to create my envelopes because clearly I'm doing a really bad job because I throw everything into one envelope and then just spend it all by the end of the month. So, wow, profiting first here on Reinvention Radio. More right after this.
Thank you. You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Olscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step-by-step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.
Looking to be a successful entrepreneur? The virtual assistant industry continues to be a top choice for those looking to start their own business. The problem can be how to become a virtual assistant. Many turn to the Bible of the VA industry, the book, Virtual Assistant, the Series, and it's the perfect guide for office managers, executive assistants, and other administrative professionals looking to make the transition from employee to successful business owner. Go to vatheseries.com to get your copy today.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Olscher.
Welcome back here to another edition of Reinvention Radio. We got Mike Michalowicz on the line, and pretty interesting stuff here. You would think some of this would just be common sense for business owners, but it's pretty interesting how most of it just is not, me included, and that's sad, because you would think I would be old enough at this point to know better, but definitely learning quite a bit here from Mike. So, Mike, as you think through the Profit First formula, obviously we got, some great stuff around the formula there in terms of revenue minus profit equals expenses, which is great, and then the envelope system. Anything else around that we should know about before we jump over to I know Rich has some questions there around the pumping plan or the pumpkin plan or the toilet paper entrepreneur, but anything else we should know around the Profit First formula?
Yeah, two more things. Remove temptation, meaning if you do this all at one bank, the day will come where you see you don't have enough money to pay your bills, which, by the way, is your business telling you you're not in a position to pay those bills. We got to stop incurring those bills going forward. Mm. But that moment comes, and you see that profit just sitting up there. You're like, I'll just borrow from it, and that defeats the whole system. So set up an account at your second bank that you don't do business with and transfer your profits and your tax withholdings that you also do through a system over there so it's out of sight and out of mind. Then you're forced to run your business off the operating expenses. Mm-hmm. And the second tip is start slowly. I've told people the system, they get all jacked up and they want to put 50% into profit, they want to pay themselves 70%, and all of a sudden they're taking more money out than the company ever even makes. So don't start big, start actually very small. I suggest if you've never done the system, only set up one account now at your bank for profit and allocate 1% of your incoming sales to profit and run your business like you normally do for the rest of the money. Over time, you can build the system, but start slowly. You have a much better chance of success.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. So, Rich, you actually, you read the pumpkin plan, right? So, what was your biggest takeaway on that? Because I know it, there's a lot in there, but what was your biggest takeaway?
Well, I mean, I use sports and gardening metaphors all the time, and
gardening really, dude?
Yeah, I have no idea. Well, you got to
plant
the seed.
You
know, weeds automatically happen. Right? They just automatically happen. But if you want a rose bush or corn or any of that stuff, you got to go plant that thing.
What if I want weed?
I knew. I should have known better.
You said weed automatically happens, so why would I want to get rid of it? I don't see any reason to do that.
Anyway, I wanted to ask you, Mike, if you could give the synopsis of Pumpkin Plan of the greatest lesson you got and why you wrote that book.
Sure, I'd love to. So the pumpkin plan, I was turned on to pumpkin farming, observed them, and found there was this kind of truism in pumpkin farming, of all things, that translates to business. And this was it. The ordinary farmer will grow, 5 or 10, 15-pound pumpkin for Halloween, but there's a faction of farmers that are colossal farmers. They grow these one-ton pumpkins. The fascinating thing was they only modify the growing process by 5%. They manage the growing process just a little bit differently, and the pumpkin responds to explosive growth. And there's basically five core steps. In the book, I actually outline all seven steps. There's five core steps that these farmers follow, and I translated those steps into doing the same in business to grow a business very quickly, very healthily, very organically, without outside capital, mm-hmm. growing your business explosively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are the five steps, and then you can go buy the book for the other two?
Okay, real quick. One is seed selection. What I mean is the core essence of this is what is your uniqueness as the owner of the business or the management team of the business, and how can the business be a platform for that? It's actually greater self-expression, greater differentiation in your market. Being the more different you are, the more you stand out. Step two is what's called Sprout Review, and this is looking at who your strongest clients are and then trying to clone them. And there's a specific methodology to cloning them. While most ordinary struggling businesses look at all clients and try to serve them all well, a colossal business actually over-caters to their best clients at the direct disregard for the lower clients. Mm-hmm. Stage three is called the watering frequency. It's basically traditional business does a saturation marketing. Today, in modern terms, it's called remarketing. God forbid you look at like a green Toyota Corolla on the web, that thing's going to chase you around on every website you go to.
Yeah.
And it's such a saturation, it actually kills the root of trust. Colossal businesses do rapport building. They're appearing just as consistently, but as providers to the market. They're giving information, content, actually just like this radio show.
Yeah.
They're supporting the community. They actually build trust far faster, and they can grow organically faster. Real quick, next two steps. The fourth one is called root analysis. In farming, the root system is critical to a colossal plant, but is ignored by the ordinary farmer. Colossal businesses look at the root of all referrals, which ironically is not asking clients for referrals. It's asking your best clients for introductions to their vendors, because their other vendors your clients' vendors are dealing with other clients just like your best client. It is the gateway to great growth. And the last step is, and we were talking about this, you guys mentioned this in the preamble, is cutting off the bad stuff. Colossal farmers are constantly pruning. They know every time a little pumpkin is allowed to grow in the vine, that it's taking away the nutrients, the water, the time, mm-hmm. and resources from the colossal pumpkin. So they cut it away.
Yeah.
In business, we don't call them little pumpkins, we call them opportunities. Struggling businesses always have so many opportunities that they're constantly trying to spread themselves out everywhere, and they prohibit colossal growth, mm-hmm. because the energy doesn't get concentrated. You must say no to great opportunities to grow a great business.
No, that's really, really good. And unfortunately, Wade's going to have to go.
Yeah, right?
But the funniest thing is like, I don't know how they do it, but I understand how they do the remarketing, the retargeting stuff online. I mean, I get that. You look at the green Toyota, and everywhere you go, you see that green, yeah. Toyota online. Now, somehow, they're doing remarketing and retargeting for me, like outside, like in real life. Like, I was looking at this black E350, the squared body style, really sharp. I wanted to get a used one. I'm a used guy. I'm a Jew, right? I mean, depreciating ass. I'm a Jew. I get this, right?
Because
I love money, profit first. So I wanted that one with the square, mm-hmm. body style. Ended up buying the one that had the rounder body style because I drove all the way out to, or I didn't drove, I Ubered all the way out to like Pasadena or something to pick up this car, and I got there, it was the wrong body style. I bought it anyway. So literally, like, every day I'm tortured. I don't care where I go. I see that black squared E350. Somehow, some way, God is retargeting or remarketing or doing something to me right now. Because everywhere I go, I am haunted by the square body style E350. But real quick here, if people want to get more information about you, where's the best place for them to go?
It's my website. It's MikeMikalowicz.com, but I'll give you a shortcut to get there because I can't even spell that long Polish name. My nickname in high school is Mike Motorbike. So if you go to MikeMotorbike.com, I'll get you there too.
Nice. And I want to make sure that you have an opportunity here to talk quickly about your initiative to eradicate what you call entrepreneurial poverty. Talk about that and what's your plan to eradicate it?
Yeah, so 83% of businesses, not just in the U.S., but globally, are surviving check by check. And what entrepreneurial poverty is this bravado on the outside of success, but this reality of struggle on the inside. And it results in constant stress. So my goal is to flip the formula and have 83% of businesses in my lifetime be profitable. And how I'm doing it, well, it's through my books, through shows, as kind as you are to have me on the show, and just trying to get the word out. And also I'm training accountants and bookkeepers now this methodology, and they're at the ground level working with entrepreneurial businesses and eradicating their poverty.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, that is a very, very cool initiative. And I got to tell you, having looked through the books, and I've actually read part of them, and it's funny, I didn't even connect. I mean, I'm just, I didn't even connect A to B here, but I've actually read a good chunk of, appropriately enough, The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. And and I was like, you know, and I didn't even connect A to B until I just finally saw I was like, oh my God, I actually read a good chunk of this book. But
I know who this guy is.
Right? I know.
No pun intended.
You caught that one. Thank you very much. But we definitely have something in common here, because I know you kind of consider yourself to be on the forensic side of, you know, kind of business making over and a makeover expert and all that fun stuff. I consider myself to be a forensic strategist. That's the new moniker I just came up with. How about that?
Strategizing for
what?
For business. A forensic strategist for business. See? All right. So we share that in common there, Mike. We're both forensics type people in our own way, and you are obviously helping people dig out profit where profit seems to be hidden, and get into the root of how to make sure that the endeavor that they are taking on is not only profitable, but also fulfilling. And so we definitely appreciate the work that you are doing in the world. Very cool having you on here. Mr. Michalowicz, thanks so much for joining us here on Reinvention Radio as we are reinventing profit today. Rich Ote, Mary Goulet, White Way, Kelly Poker, and Mary Goulet.
And me again, twice.
We'll talk to you guys next time.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Olsha, visit reinventionradio.com.